For 27 years, the Kyle and Jackie O show has dominated Australian radio and divided it. Loved by some, condemned by others, the program built its reputation on shock, spectacle, and moments pushing well past the boundaries of taste. As conversations about sexism, power, and accountability shift across the media industry, many are now reassessing what the show represented and the impact it had on audiences. The Wire's Thomas Kutis asked Dr. Dennis Muller from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne what he thought kept audiences hooked, even as the content pushed so many boundaries.
Look, when you look, I think, at the demographics, they tend to skew male and youngish, sort of 18 to 39. And I think probably in the current climate, what their kind of boundaryless vulgarity did was to allow them to sort of let off a bit of steam. It sort of, in some way, articulated their own frustrations, particularly, yeah. I'm afraid to say, frustrations towards women. And I think that that kind of release, if you like, is what attracted them. Kyle and Jackie O were saying things that they wanted to say and either didn't have the articulateness or the courage to say themselves. So they lived vicariously, I think, through what they heard on the Kyle and Jackie O show.
Some of the stuff they were saying, their attitude, do you think it actually reflected Australia's cultural attitude at the time, or do you think it actually helped shape them and their program for the last 27 years? What do you think about that?
Oh, I think they couldn't have succeeded without their filling some need at the time. I think the culture over the last couple of decades has been misogynistic. We've seen it from our political leaders. We saw it from Tony Abbott. We saw it from Scott Morrison. We heard it on other radio stations, particularly Alan Jones and John Laws in Sydney. So there was, in a sense, leadership of the worst possible kind, but there was kind of cultural leadership which didn't exactly encourage, but certainly did not condemn misogyny and crudity. And I think that this, of course, was out on its own for those two distinctive qualities, but I think they did fit in with that general temper of the times, but attractive only to a particular slice of the population, that kind of demographic I just described.
A lot of people have said, and it's always been in discussion, that this show normalised a lot of sexist and, you know, pretty vulgar behaviour, which I'm sure has happened over time and has probably nearly got them taken off the air. What moments stood out to you the most when they were crossing the line, do you think?
I can't remember a particular episode beyond, I mean, gross scatological stuff is what sort of stuck in my mind. Misogyny was bad enough. But then they had a segment in which they had sound of staff members urinating, and they invited their listeners to guess whether the person was male or female. There was talk about menstruation, periods. There was talk about oral sex. This kind of extreme, but not just vulgarity, it was filth, is what stood out for me on that side. But yes. Then the way in which Kyle Sandilands in particular would mock women, and, you know, it was to some extent, and in fact to a considerable extent, enabled by Jackie O, who kind of tried to bring a kind of a soft edge to it all. I can't think of a particular incident in that area, but it was a kind of pattern that he would say something absolutely outrageous, and then Jackie O would giggle or try to pass it off as something less serious than it really was. That was, and the fact that they breached the broadcasting standards 12 times
many times
in 2025.
Many times,
Yeah, 12, but in 1 year, 12 times in 1 year. And that reflects on the broadcaster regulator. That reflects on the Australian Communications and Media Authority, who would fine them, or they would send them letters, or they would wring their hands. But at some point, it was necessary to make an example of them. And the only way to do that, of course, because the ACMA doesn't regulate individual broadcasters, it regulates the license holders. The only thing to have done was basically to have suspended the program and then let ARN, the station owners, work out for themselves whether they thought it was still a business proposition to go on. That's the only way, that's the only language these characters understand. If you go on sending them letters or fining them, so long as the ratings continue to be good, the advertising holds up, then sanctions of that kind have no meaning.
One of the things that interests me the most was that it took so long for the broader public to sort of shift and start calling this stuff out more seriously. Why do you think it took so long to do that?
Oh, because I think it took a long time for the public at large to realise and then accept the shocking rate at which women are killed by their intimate partners in Australia. That took a long time, even though the data were known for a long time. It took a long time for the public firstly to accept it and then to really understand what some of the drivers were. And I think when that realisation did dawn, then there was a mood shift. I mean, there's been quite a big effort on the part of governments and other organisations to raise public awareness about this. But of course, initially, it only has impact in a different demographic from the demographic that was listening to the Kyle and Jackie O program. Only, I think, when it seeped into the minds of that demographic did their ratings begin to fall.
Do you think this could be the start of a new career for Jackie O in some sort of way?
Oh, bound to be. I think she's already got an offer, hasn't she?
Yes.
I think she will certainly... I mean, she won't get another $10 million a year offer.
Oh, I don't think she would.
I mean, that was obscene to start with, wasn't it? I mean, what a gross obscenity that was. But she'll get work. What happens to Sandilands? I have no idea.
Could this be the end of him?
Hard to say. There are pockets in the broadcast industry which still think there's a quid to be made with that kind of stuff, that kind of filth and misogyny. But I suspect that the high tide mark for that has passed. So difficult to see immediately where he would go. Jackie O has got this offer straight away. Kyle Sandilands certainly hasn't. But, you know, it's always dangerous to say it'll never happen. It may happen. He may have to develop a different shtick. But I think for now, he's certainly finished. But he's very likely, I think, to make a comeback.
Now, the fact that we're in a different media landscape, do you think that the show could survive in the same form today, or do you think this is the end? This is the end for good.
I would be very surprised if another show like this could take root. I think the climate has changed. We no longer have prime ministers and leaders of the opposition making hay out of misogyny. We no longer have Alan Jones and John Laws on air pushing the kind of misogyny they were pushing. I don't hear from, for example, the Ben Fordhams of this world on 2GB. I don't hear the same kind of antisocial content on the scale that we heard from Jones and Laws. I think these are indicators that the broadcast industry, which is pretty well attuned, I think, to public sentiment, realises that the high tide mark for this sort of stuff has passed, and that perhaps this continuing emphasis on sex and women is socially divisive and harmful. I think they've also shifted their focus more towards the race agenda of the extreme right. I think the focus has shifted in that direction. Concern about Muslims, concern about people of colour, concern about immigration. I think there's just been a fundamental shift in the things that these kind of radio stations are now going to be paying attention to.
All right, Dr. Dennis Muller, thanks so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Dennis Muller from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne, speaking with The Wire's Thomas Kutis.